As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, hello. Thank you for tuning in. Before we get started this week, I just wanted to give a quick thank you to all of those who have rated the podcast and given us reviews. In particular, to a couple listeners, one, Coxie696 wrote recently, "I have to say, as a non-techie but someone who's interested in innovation and what's really going on in Silicon Valley, this hits the spot. Compelling listening for anybody who cares about the future." Thank you, Coxie. I'd like to think that we all care about the future, so of course, everyone should be listening. Dan Fellows writes, "A huge reference for me in the world of marketing, digital, technology, and business. Danny has an incredibly disarming style, which tends to get more out of his guests." Dan Fellows, I'm disarmed by your review. Thank you. So come on, join the tribe. I even have a special offer. Limited time. I will give you 100 shares in Danny in the Valley. Way, way before it becomes a unicorn. Anyhow, thank you again, everybody, for the reviews. Please do keep them coming. And now, on to the show.
Yo. Technology. What is it all about?
So just take a moment to get comfortable.
I was walking down the street this week. I was in Los Angeles visiting a few companies and actually recording a couple podcast episodes, including this week's.
Just aware of the space around you in the room.
So I was reading my emails as I was walking. I was listening to music. I was toggling between the email and Twitter and also Google Maps to make sure I was going the right direction.
Perfectly normal for the mind to wander off.
And all of a sudden I hear this loud, booming voice. It just says, "Look up!" And I stop and I look up and there's this very large man who I got very close to just barreling right into.
Just bringing the mind into the body, becoming more aware of the physical senses.
I've had a lot of those moments since I've been back here in work and otherwise. Actually, I was just writing a story the other week. I was up very late because oftentimes I have to do that. About 2 a.m. I'd fired the story off and then I'd sent out a load of questions to the CEO I was writing about. And my assumption was that he would just get back to me when he woke up. But as I was kind of getting ready for bed, I got an email back from him within 5 minutes. And not only had he responded, he had given full explanations and answers to all of my questions. And this is a guy who's running a company, he has employees, and he's answering my questions in the middle of the night.
And in your own time, you can just gently open the eyes, have a stretch if you'd like to, and just sit back in the chair.
Rich Pearson is with us this week, and Rich is the co-founder of Headspace, which is the world's most popular meditation app. It doesn't sound like a serious business per se, but it is. The company is now worth several $100 million. They have millions in revenue, hundreds of thousands of subscribers. It's a real business. It has a great backstory, and I think you'll find it very interesting. So here's Rich. So how many people have downloaded this thing?
About 16.5 million.
16.5 million. Is that mainly in the US?
It's about 50% in the US and the rest of the world, but the majority of it's in the UK.
Oh, really?
Yeah, about 30, just over 30% of the other 50s in the UK, and then the 20% is like rest of the world.
And you guys just raised a boatload of money.
Well, we did do a Series B round, yes, we did.
I call it a boatload. It was like 36, 37 yeah. million or something like that?
That's about right, yeah.
What's the plan? Because right now it's been downloaded 16 million times. Mm-hmm. You're all over the world. Mm-hmm. Now what?
Yeah. Well, it's only in English at the moment.
Are you going to do it in Spanish?
Yeah, we're going to start doing it. We're going to do it in a few languages. That's the plan.
What's the first language?
Well, it could be Spanish, could be German, could be maybe Indian.
Germans are quite uptight.
they could probably do with space. Everyone could do with some headspace, to be fair. Yeah. I find that's the thing with it. If you've got a mind, I think everyone struggles with it from time to time. So
yeah.
I think it's a global thing.
So that's the idea, is to kind of go international?
Yeah, and also to look at enterprise as well. Like, that's been a bigger thing than we thought.
Getting companies to offer it as a...
A lot of companies kind of just reach out to us anyway. They were kind of reverse lead inquiries where people just reaching out. And what happened was we'd get a passionate user that worked at Google, they'd work at Uber or wherever it is. They go to their HR and then they'd say, I love this product, we should get it. And that's how it was kind of happening organically. So we were kind of servicing the organic kind of inquiries. But now we've kind of decided to go after it a bit more.
In a more formal way.
Yeah. So we hired Ross Hoffman out of Twitter. So he's heading up all the enterprise. He's heading up enterprise, international, and BizDev and partnerships.
So the way it works is, I mean, actually, I downloaded it. Your co-founder, Andy.
Yeah.
He's
very smooth.
He has a very buttery voice.
Yeah, he does. It's
just
true.
Kind of calmed me down immediately.
That's true.
In 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's true.
For those who don't know, it's a daily meditation.
That's
guided
right.
meditation. And you start free.
Yeah.
And then you try to get people to...
Yeah, to subscribe.
How many people actually make that leap? Because that's always the thing, right?
Yeah. We don't release subscriber numbers, but we're pretty happy with the... Like, if you compare it and benchmark it to some of the bigger subscription services, like, we're right on par with that conversion. So we feel pretty good about the conversion, actually.
Can we go back to how it started?
Yeah, sure.
Do we travel back in time to London?
Sure.
And you, how old when you...
Yeah, so I was 27 when I met Andy.
Andy was your co-founder. He was a Buddhist monk.
He was not when I met him. So he was a Buddhist monk for about 10 years all over the world. And then he was in Russia and he decided that he wanted to kind of teach meditation. So
teach meditation in Russia?
No, he was actually, he was teaching meditation. That was where he got sent as a Tibetan Buddhist monk. And he was teaching meditation in a Buddhist center, and one of the clients that came in was an exec at BP out there. He got invited to come into BP in Russia to teach people meditation. A load of Russian oil execs, and he went in with his skirt and his bald head, and it didn't go down too well.
It did not. They were like,
They were like, this is definitely not for, exactly. Yeah, this is definitely not for me. So he went to his teacher and he said, look, it's difficult doing this.
So as a Tibetan monk, do you get sent around like the Mormons do? Like, you kind
It's not quite like the Mormons. I don't know enough about the Mormons to comment on that, but I don't think it's like, it's not that they have to go and knock on doors. I think it's one of the only religions where it's kind of attraction rather than promotion.
Right.
But there's various Buddhist centers of the lineage that he was in, and he was kind of sent, you can get sent. And there was a teacher out there that he wanted to go and spend some time with, which he did. And then he said, look, I'm really passionate about teaching meditation, but this is a bit of a difficult get up in the skirt, you know. He said, well, are you more passionate about being a monk or more passionate about teaching meditation? He said, well, I'm actually more passionate about teaching meditation. He applied to there's a circus school in London do you know this in East London, the London Circus School of
Arts?
Actually,
I think I have heard
of
this.
Yeah, it's in Hackney. And he applied for that, and so he could get a student visa and a loan to come back to London.
Did he want to join the circus?
Yeah, because he used to be a gymnast before he became...
Of course he did.
Yeah, of course he did. This is a very traditional business partnership story. He got on the school, although he was... And he says this, he was one of the oldest people there. And he went back there so he was doing the degree in circus arts, and at the same time he was teaching people meditation in a one-on-one setting. When I met him, I'd been doing some freelance marketing for my friend who had a company in London, and he said, look, I've met this Buddhist monk, he's been teaching me meditation. That was the first thing that surprised me, because I was like, Adam was like the last guy that I ever thought would do meditation. It's kind of like quite a surprise to me. So we went along and he said, look, I can't afford to pay you, but how about we do a skill swap? I'll come up with some...
A barter.
Yeah. You know, I'll teach you meditation. You can come up with some ideas for my clinic. And at that time, I was suffering from really acute anxiety. Like I was really struggling.
You were?
Yeah, really struggling. I'd been in a career in advertising and...
What were you advertising?
Everything that you probably shouldn't advertise, but mainly Axe deodorant.
So were you actually coming up with those ads? Like, well, all the, like, the young lads
it was
spraying themselves with...
It was... It's my fault that a lot of teenage boys...
Smell terrible.
So that was, like, I think this is karmic. This is definitely karmic payback. Yeah, so I was doing that and was living really, you've lived in London. It's a pretty hard lifestyle if you choose to go down that route. And
so
did
you have like a Jerry Maguire moment where you kind of like...
Yeah, it was less of a Jerry Maguire moment and more of a kind of, it just didn't feel like the place that I should be. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I left. I was actually studying to be an acupuncturist at the time because I was getting acupuncture for my stress. And my acupuncturist said, look, have you ever thought about being an acupuncturist? And I was like, no. He said, I think you'd be really good. Like, you should do it. So I was doing that course and then I was freelancing. I kind of knew in my heart of hearts I never wanted to be an acupuncturist, but I just knew I didn't want to do the kind of lifestyle that I was kind of leading before. And so then I met Andy and, you know, from that first day when he taught me meditation,
So you met him as a, let me try this meditation thing.
Yeah, I was kind of intrigued about it, but also kind of, I had no idea what it was, but I had all the previous kind of preconceptions, I suppose, that most people have about meditation. And I thought I was going to go meet a monk. And then he was just this normal guy. He had the bald head, but, and that was the thing that struck me the most, actually, was one, how easy it was to understand when he explained it. And also then when I looked at all of his clients, it was kind of everyone. Like, that was the thing that was surprised me the most. It was absolutely everyone from all walks of life, all sexes, all ages, all races. And I asked him about that and he was like, well, you know, if you've got a mind, you probably struggle with it from time to time. And that, one, the personal experience, and it, like, it wasn't like everything, like my anxiety was fixed at all. It wasn't that. But I did think there's something in here that's really worth exploring, coupled with the fact that I was like, why don't more people know about this? Like, that's the thing. And then you look at all the people that are doing it and you're like, why aren't more people doing this? And this was back in 2008, way before mindfulness was like a buzz thing. And like, it just wasn't in that. And we're in London, the most cynical market in the world.
Absolutely, so, yeah. The most cynical. Yeah. Yes. That's 2008. And then had you had an ambition to start your own business?
My dad's had his own business since he was like 19, still got it, still going.
What is it?
It's Central Heating Company. You know, he says a glorified plumber. And my mum has had a dress shop ever since I've been 5 years old. Still got the dress shop, same dress shop, like in a small town. So
are they subscribers?
They are subscribers, but they haven't had to pay for it. So that's I haven't charged my parents. Being brought up with two parents that have always worked for themselves, I think I always had a sense that it was a possibility and that was something that you should probably do at some point. So I did always have that. And I'd always been trying to get ideas off the ground. None of them necessarily worked. So I'd always had that drive to want to do something. But when I met Andy, like, the relationship was more of a... He started off as my meditation teacher, then he became my friend. And we didn't really decide to go into business together until like about 8 months after meeting. So it was a very natural kind of organic process, which is why I think it kind of works so well.
So you start the company.
Yeah.
And the idea is you create an app on like the most controlling piece of technology in our lives.
Well,
to help us unplug.
Yeah, that's it. Look, the thing was, we felt like, how do we improve the health and happiness of the world? And we thought, well, that was the goal. And the way that we thought we could do that is if we could reframe the way people think about their mental health. And we felt like, how could we get people to reappraise the way they think of their health? And I think people only really think about their health in terms of physical activity and maybe nutrition now. I think that's starting to come in. But mental health, I would say, is the last one. And actually, I think our thought was, unless you have a good, healthy mind, like, how are you going to make great, healthy choices about whatever you're going to do in life? And so we felt like that was the place to start. And the first idea that I came up with was like, look, it's a shame that you're in this room on your own, like, you're a great teacher, like, we should put this on an app. And he didn't feel that it would work on an app because traditionally it had always been taught from teacher to student in a kind of oral lineage.
It's quite an intimate setting.
Yeah. And so he wanted to kind of go to the live events space because that felt more comfortable. I think, look, hindsight is no sight, but those events, they were amazing because we got like 200 to 400 people every month in a room and we got to speak to them.
How'd you get people to come to them?
We got a big title page spread in the Times. The title of it was The Expert's Expert, and it was Britain's Top Meditation Guru. And we hadn't even launched or anything. And it was just about Andy and his practice and like what we were trying to do, like just a bit of a setup. And from that, we just got approached by all of these publishers. So in the end, we ended up doing a deal with Hodder and Staunton for a 3-book deal before we'd even done our first event. That piece of press got the book deal, and then that led to more press and more stories, and then we got some press around the events. And then from that, we got some really interesting people to kind of come to those events from all walks of life. We built a proper community in London, like pretty early. The people that couldn't come to the events were saying, like, how can we get access to this content? They were like emailing from Sweden, Australia, they were emailing from all over the world. And we thought, oh, maybe there's something in this. And so we started selling some bits of content online, and then that kind of eventually kind of led to the app and the subscription. But the app and the subscription really was the last roll of the dice, like, because the business was really bad. And we,
what do you mean it was bad? It sounds like it was really good.
Well, it sounds like events are really hard to make money from when you're doing them every month. And we were ended up giving away a lot of tickets for free and to get people in. And it was really difficult to sell tickets every single month. And the event format that worked the best actually was, it started off as like an 8-hour event, then it went down to 6-hour, then 4 hours, and then we
started off as an 8-hour event,
all day 8-hour event.
That's
just with Andy on
dedication.
Stage.
Dedication.
Just Andy on stage for 8 hours. It was amazing because we learned a hell of a lot from what people liked, what they responded to, the language that he used, it was the whole research for the product. Like without that, the product wouldn't have been what it was when we did.
Right,
like,
it was effectively like a series of focus groups before
it was.
You launched your app.
Yeah. Up until that point, we just kind of had money from friends and family, like, and we bunched together a pool of cash. And the subscription product that we launched in January 2012, that was the first version of the app. We built for about $50,000. That was like
50K for the first app.
Yeah, for the first app. All the animations, we got Andy
Call
and I
in
pulled in every single favor that we ever had to get that thing out. It really started to take off. And then Andy and I had always felt that, so that was in January 2012. So March 2013, we moved here. And it was
You're looking very tan.
You've lived
there. I walked over here in the sun.
You get it. You've lived in London.
Yes, I have.
So you understand. And I think I'd been in London for 14 years, and he'd spent a lot of time in London. And we always felt that we wanted to live in California, like on a very personal level. We also felt that this idea would get a lot of traction here.
And you're a home of, this is California's the capital of crunchiness and...
Crunchiness and granola.
Yeah.
It is.
Lots of Birkenstocks.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that. And we felt that there was an interesting thing because we've always tried to distance ourselves from that kind of space. But the reason that we didn't go to San Francisco, because everyone was like, why don't you go to San Francisco? That's where everything's happening. For us, LA, and this was back in 2013, but we could start to see it happening, which is this really interesting convergence of media, creative talent, tech, there's fashion, there's food, it's really diverse. I think there's a really interesting kind of cultural moment happening in LA. And we felt that San Francisco, as great as it is, it felt a bit too kind of tech focused for what
it does.
We
it does feel like there's a change here. Yeah. Having grown up in California, just there is seems to be, I mean, especially you have Snap not too far from here, and it brings something different to the table with the entertainment angle. And
I think so. I also think, you know, we're a content company at our core, and creativity is like a really important part of what we do. So especially for a company like ours, I think this is even more important to be in a place like this.
I heard a podcast recently with James Corden where he was talking about how everybody's like, oh, LA sucks, it's terrible. But he said, but if you're into content, there's no better place to be.
I don't know. I just think there's really interesting stuff happening here at the moment.
And you have some celebrity endorsers, right? Or people who have kind of given you, like, look, did LeBron James shout you out?
There's a lot. I mean, there's been the great thing.
What's the best one you've got? Have you got any personal messages from like somebody really cool? You're like, wow, that's.
Well, one of the big ones was Emma Watson when she tweeted that. That actually had a huge.
Did
that
it?
Had, yeah, because we were
saw a spike.
Yeah, we were much smaller then, and so that was that
when was
a
that?
Few. That was maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
And had you raised money at that point?
No, I don't think we had. Because we didn't raise money till September 2015.
Did you send her a thank you night?
We did.
You did?
We tried to tweet her back. She never tweeted us back, but we said thank you.
And then you raised the first round of money.
Yeah, in September 2015 with Churning.
That took you from, whatever, 10 people?
We were about 18 people at that point, 20 people at that point, yeah.
And now?
We're about 160.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Can you talk about that, the growth? Because you've also had to just kind of let some people go.
Yeah.
And that sounded like it was quite traumatic.
Yeah, it was. It was really difficult, that.
Were you prepared to go from 18 to 20 to 170-something?
I think it's really hard. I've spoken to lots of people about it. I've never met anyone that's kind of got it exactly right. When you're growing that quickly, it is just, stuff does break. I just think it does. I think it was difficult to kind of just keep pace with how quickly the product and the space was growing and what we needed. You know, if I look back on hindsight, I think the big mistake was really focusing heavily on kind of brand marketing too early. Like if I look back,
what does that mean?
So, I think we made the decision to test out some TV advertising, some outdoor advertising, and to like try and build the brand that way, like more from the traditional background. Quite old school.
Go
actually.
Back into your Axe body spray.
Exactly, like going, and I think that was probably down to some old kind of learned behavior that I'd had. You know, if I look back on it, we'd kind of built a bit of an internal agency here. I think that was a bad call.
Because it didn't work?
Yeah, I'm not sure that our brand in the space that it's in necessarily needs big brand advertising.
Do you just raise this money? I think it was a few weeks ago. To 36, 37 million. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
What do you tell the hard-nosed investors who are like, yeah, this is a wellness app?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, and what is the kind of the plan for global domination, or what do you tell people like that, and how do you get them to buy in? Because it seems like it's quite a squishy concept.
If you look at our mission of how do we improve the health and happiness of the world, the way that we think about it is, okay, how do you create the most comprehensive guide to health and happiness from when you're born to when you die and everything in between? So how can we create...
That's quite ambitious.
Yeah, like how can you create content and experiences that can help you no matter what stage of life that you're at, whether you're a kid...
How old is your youngest?
About 3 or 4. With our kids content. So we've got parents that use our kids content with, you know.
What is that?
So we've got shorter
based
meditations.
Put your blocks down, put your crayons down. Be mindful.
Be mindful, exactly. Stop drawing. We've got like focus, calm, wake up, a sleep exercise. And they're different time lengths based on the age group. You know, we know that that's a massive driver for for people. Really? Yeah. It's a really popular thing. Because I think, look, if you've... Because it's not that kids are going onto the App Store and downloading Headspace and using the kids' content, obviously.
Yeah.
It's coming from the parents. And if you think, if you're a parent and you've had a good experience in meditation, you're going to want to try and teach your kids that. People that are open to meditation in the US alone, it's well over 150 million people.
Who's, if they're surveyed, say, yeah, I'd try that.
Yeah. People are becoming more and more open to it. I think we're just at this stage of how do we educate people that they can...
Why do you think that is? Is it because these little phones, the little screens that we have that make us distracted and stressed out? I mean, I was just...
Yeah.
Before I came over here, I was on the computer, I was on my phone, I was on social media.
How did that feel?
It was super relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the point, right? Yeah. Is that, I mean, and I have I have an eight-month-old, speaking of your...
Yeah.
The three... He's already obsessed with the phone. Because he sees,
you guys using it. As we look here now at your phone on that table, it's just an object on the table. Like, it's actually not harm. It's our relationship to it that causes us the harm. And I just think that we're right at the start of working out how we can use these devices in like a healthy way. And our hope is that by teaching people some of these techniques that you become more aware, so that so many people are like, on their laptop, on their phone, trying to speak to someone, eating their lunch, and not realizing that they're doing all those things together. If you meditate and you become a bit more aware, maybe you've got more chance of actually noticing the craziness of that situation to maybe stop and just do one thing at a time. That's where people are. They're on their mobile devices. Like, you can't, it's pointless trying to build something over here. Like, I'd much rather if we could come up with an experience that wasn't in a way, but I think meeting people where they are is really important. I would hope that all the kind of young generation of creators and entrepreneurs are thinking about, okay, how can we use this and how can we come up with things that are actually genuinely going to help people? And I do think that we will. The pendulum is like right at the start of it. I just don't think it's kind of swung far enough for us to start using it in a smart way yet. But I do think people are starting to understand that their relationship to their devices is unhealthy and looking for ways in which they can kind of create a bit more.
Well, it's central, right? It's the kind of the thing that tethers us or kind of takes your attention no matter where you are. It's like the classic, oh, I'm out at Yosemite.
Yeah.
Oh, God, look at that on Facebook.
Yeah.
God, they look like they're having fun.
More fun than me. Yeah, exactly.
You guys obviously aren't the only ones who have
latched
onto this.
That's right.
So in 2008, you were it, right?
That was it.
And now how many...
I think I'm right in saying there's over like 3,000 like meditation and relaxation apps.
3,000?
In the App Store. If you look globally, there's over 3,000.
Is that worrying or is that...
Well, I think the thing that worries me the most about it actually is I wonder about the quality of the teaching and how good the content is. That's the thing that kind of... You know, I wouldn't personally trust my mental health to someone unless I knew that they were kind of an expert. I do worry about how much of the content out there is actually...
Well, that leads to a question. Yeah. So how much kind of, I don't know if science is the right word.
I think
science is in what you guys do. Because if you think about it, like I had yesterday morning, I had my little session.
Yeah.
And it was just Andy speaking for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And I just kind of zoned out. And
yeah.
I felt very relaxed.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel... kind of hard science-y.
That's right. Well, I think it depends how you use it. I think if you're only using it for kind of like 4 minutes, and I think it's useful if you are using it for 4 minutes 10 times a day, I think that's really valuable. I think obviously building up to some of the longer time lengths, I think that's a really useful kind of advanced practice as well. So we have a chief science officer here, so Dr. Megan Jones-Bell, and we have about 4 full-time scientists internally that are working on...
What kind of science?
Yeah, so working on clinical trials around...
You guys are running clinical trials?
Yeah. Look, our thing on this is we know the authenticity of the teachings of where these have come from. We can trace them back like 3,000 years from all of Andy's teachers. So we feel really good about the authenticity. And we're trying to layer over that added piece of science. And we've been at this on the science side for... over 5 years. We're doing internal studies, working out, you know, from our customers and dose responses, like how many minutes works.
dose.
Yeah, like
right,
yeah,
your dose, it, your it, dose of mindfulness.
Is it 2 minutes? Is it 3 minutes? It's like we're starting to look at that stuff as well as clinical trials against sleep and anxiety, depression, and trying to prove out if our content
in other words, like
the
verticals,
yeah,
so to speak.
Exactly.
I know you don't talk about subscriber numbers, but just this idea that it. How prevalent is it that this is kind of like the New Year's gym membership?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm going to get in shape. Yeah. I'm going to go on the elliptical. And after 5 minutes, you're like, whew, all right, I'm done.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about this is you don't have to go to a gym. You don't have to put any gym clothes on. You can do it anywhere, and you can do it from 2 minutes up to an hour. So I think it gives people a lot more flexibility to do it. If you've ever done any physical exercise, you go to the gym for, you know, once a week, it feels nice, but you're never going to see any results. And I think it's exactly the same in meditation. Like, we're genuinely trying to, like, help people build a habit, a healthy habit, so they can do it on a regular basis so that they see the results. The more you do it and the more you get used to that feeling and knowing how your body feels when it feels healthy, you just do it then. It doesn't become a thing on the side to do. It just becomes part of your life. And I think it's the same with a meditation practice. It's like, how do you get people to understand, one, their motivation for why they're doing it. That's really important. And then two, that moment of like when they finish the meditation, understanding like how they feel, like what was that moment. And if you can kind of create that kind of loop and someone can understand why they're doing it and then the benefits of it, then I think the habit can start to form for people.
Right. What's the ultimate goal? Is it to become the kind of the Google of mindfulness?
The Google of, well, no, I like, for me, like, I often people say, like, what is the, I don't think that there is a brand necessarily that I would kind of liken it to. I would just come back to that mission of
Martha Stewart Living.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely not that. Definitely not that, Danny. No, I think that idea of like, how do we improve the health and happiness of the world, and that comprehensive guide, that for me would feel like we'd done a really awesome job.
What was your worst day of work?
Doing the layoffs by a country mile. That was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, I think.
How many people was it?
It's about 13 people, yeah.
And that was because it just was the wrong decision, or?
Yeah, I think it was like, I genuinely think it was a strategic like misstep. Like, it was definitely like not the right call. It's hard because it's people and it's their lives, and you know, you feel very responsible for those things. So that was tough.
Having started this business and now you're kind of all over the world, and what was it along this journey that maybe you didn't think you would have to know starting a business?
How long have you got? I think the hardest thing is the people stuff. I just think that is...
What do you mean the people stuff?
Well, just finding the right people, retaining the right people, motivating them in the right way. The complexity of lots of different personalities and lots of different backgrounds and different cultures, and bringing that together, trying to build a really, you know, a functioning organization that's moving really, really quickly. That's, I think, is like the ongoing
kind of heart.
Yeah, that never stops. And that is really the thing I think about the most. It's like, how are we finding the best people? How are we retaining the best people? And then how we kind of motivating all the people that are here to do the best work of their lives. You know, that's a hard thing to get right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you guys profitable?
Yeah, we're pretty.
You are?
We're pretty close to that, yeah.
So you're pretty close.
Well, you could take that either way. But yeah, no, that's the thing. I think, you know, when your question earlier about the investors, like, this is a real business with real revenues. And I think that's the thing that's kind of exciting, because you have this huge social mission and then this really exciting kind of commercial opportunity, and I think they're both in service of each other, you know.
And is the plan of ultimately to go public, become a public company?
You know, we just haven't talked about that in a huge amount of detail. I think the main thing is, how do we build the best possible product against that mission that we talked about earlier? That's just all we're laser focused on. And then when we do that, I think those options, whatever they may be further down the line, will become apparent and clear, and that decision can be made. But there's no plans of yet to do that.
You know, when you started out, I'm guessing people looked at you a bit funny when you said, yeah, I'm going to start a meditation company.
That would be fair. And this is my business partner, the ex-Buddhist monk. Yeah, that would be fair to say that people used to back away from me at parties, yeah.
And now?
Well, they still back away. No, I think...
that's because you're not wearing Axe body spray.
That's exactly... No, I think definitely... I've definitely seen a shift in the way that people have reacted to meditation over time. Like, at first, people genuinely used to physically kind of back away. And Andy and I would just really try and position...
They would actually physically back away.
Yeah. I remember going to a dinner with some of my dad's friends, and a couple of them like got up from the table and kind of went to the other end of the table to go and speak to some other people. I think I'd gone in that position where I'd had a really good job. Then I told them I was an acupuncturist. Then I told them I was starting a meditation company
with a guy for who's training to be.
That's exactly right. I think everyone thought I'd gone mad. So I've had that reaction all the way through to people just being quite excited about what it can do. And I think as people have understood the kind of benefits of meditation, whether that's through science or whether that's people telling their personal stories, but it hasn't reached the kind of mass population yet.
Is it still niche?
I don't think it's niche, but I don't think it's mass just yet. You know, mental health is, you know, from the mental health costs are going to exceed, I think by 2020, they're going to exceed diabetes, respiratory illness, and cancer combined. That's what mental health they think is going to cost. You know, we do get some, give some here. So for every subscription that gets bought, we give away one for free. So we're working with Oxfam, Médecins Sans Frontières, a bunch of schools, the whole of Newark school district. So we're trying to work out ways that we can give it away to the people that can't afford it, working with prisons. So that's one bit on our side. But I do think that the healthcare system, you know, we're doing a lot of studies with the NHS in London.
You are?
Yeah. And we've been doing pilots with nurses in certain districts, and so.
What are the studies trying to ascertain? Yeah. For example, with the NHS,
like compassion fatigue. So doctors and nurses that are working really, really hard. There's this idea of like burnout, where they're giving so much to the patients, they kind of burn out because they're always kind of giving. So how can you kind of help to maintain? You know, and if you've spent any time in the National Health Service, which you probably have.
We had our kid there.
Yeah, so you know, like it's an amazing service for so many things, but so many of those people have worked really, really hard. So it's like, how can you help the doctors? How can you help the nurses? Does it help with their stress? We're looking at chronic pain in patients as well. I think there's so much in the healthcare system, and it's like really early days. We're pretty passionate about that space.
You have partnerships, like corporate partnerships.
We work with a lot of companies. We work with like LinkedIn and Google and a bunch of different folks. But we also do some brand partnership work. So we've just done a big partnership with Nike.
What is that partnership?
So it's with their Nike.
Meditate, just do it.
Yeah.
Just meditate.
Just meditate. No, it's with their Nike training club. So that idea of mental fitness being as important, you know, your mind-body link. And so content within their kind of product. And looking at events and a bunch of different stuff with those guys.
Google and LinkedIn, what are you doing with them? Just offering it as
offering as a subscription to their their employees, yeah.
Endorsed by them too.
Exactly, right. Yeah. And then we're on about 8 different airlines at the moment where we've got...
United definitely needs it.
Yeah, United could do with it. That would be fair. But yeah, we're on Delta and Virgin Atlantic, JetBlue, a bunch of different...
Oh, well, in their kind of entertainment system.
In their entertainment system.
And so 5 years from now, you think it will be commonplace for people to have their digital helper?
I think so.
Mental health helper.
I think so. I think that idea of like a personal trainer for your mind in your pocket, I think that is something that people will definitely have.
That's all the time we have. I'd like to thank Rich for sitting down with me today. I'm now off to hit the streets of Los Angeles once again. This time I will be doing it with my phone in my pocket, looking up. You should try it too. That is, of course, if you feel the need to rate the podcast and give us a review. In that case, you know, feel free, multitask. I'm sure Rich would understand. I know I would. Anyhow, that is all the time we have for this week. Do stop in the Apple Podcast, give us a rating, and talk to you next week.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.